Chapter 3. They Have a Plan. In the fall of 1994, when hope had partially replaced despair in the Middle East and the phrase peace process was still relatively fresh, Yasser Arafat's duplicity and shameless corruption were excused as the necessary attributes of a wily guerrilla leader. Everyone then in power, from Bill Clinton to Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin, expected the 66-year-old Arafat to mature as he dealt with the day-to-day responsibilities of government. Few people at that time understood or wanted to understand what was going on under the surface. I got a good taste of those undercurrents during a swing through Syria, Jordan, and Gaza in autumn 1994. I timed my trip to coincide with the Israeli-Jordanian peace treaty, which was signed at a specially erected tent in the desert on October 26, 1994, and witnessed with great fanfare by President Clinton. In addition to government officials, I planned to speak with radical Islamic fundamentalist leaders and Palestinian groups who had announced their rejection of talking with Israel. For many years, I had been meeting with Palestinians from a wide variety of backgrounds, guerrilla leaders and propagandists in Beirut, farmers, shopkeepers, and politicians in the West Bank, and cosmopolitans, such as the PLO's representative in France, Ibrahim Saus, a concert pianist who became a personal friend and dinner guest at our house outside of Paris. While they were all highly critical of Israel and blamed Israel for the conflict, and in some cases for their personal ills, most expressed willingness to live side by side with Israel with clear, recognized borders between the two states. I could not remember any of them uttering the type of crazed conspiracy theories that have made the Protocols the premier cookbook of anti-Semitic hate for over a century. Their hatred of Israel was political, not visceral. Or so I thought. Like most reporters, I had read so many Hate Israel and Hate America pieces in the Middle Eastern press over the years that I no longer paid them much attention. It simply wasn't news when an editorialist in Cairo or Damascus accused Israel of evil deeds, or when an Iranian leader blamed America for his country's troubles. The Arabs were just playing to their street, exploiting petty hatreds and envy for political purposes, while the Iranians were trying to divert attention from their own disastrous management.